General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
The complete on-the-spot recording of a lion kill. To this end, General Motors sent Gordon Pethick to Southwest Africa. Traveling by plane, car, and truck, Gordon reached the gates of the Atosha Game Reserve one late afternoon. At Okokuyu, he and Basi Martens, one of Southwest's most celebrated hunters, were joined by Stoffel Roche, the chief game warden. And together, they set off into the vast Mopani-strewn sandveld, driving mainly by instinct into the forbidding and secret sanctuaries of the Atosha. Could they find what they were looking for? What were the chances of recording that lightning lion strike? 1,000 to 1? Well, this is the story of what actually happened. A scene-by-scene account of a true adventure, which I have called Feast for a King. 50 miles they traveled, moving from waterhole to waterhole, searching for the spoor of lion. Here they found elephant and rhino tracks, there the tread of kudu and hemsbok, and once even the all-too-vivid imprints of the hated poacher. But no pug marks, nowhere the fresh spoor of lion. And then, on the second day out at 4 in the afternoon, they reached a waterhole called Koinseb, the place of peace. As the fish eagles circled overhead, complaining at the intrusion, Gordon eyed the scene with wonder.
We're actually situated on the banks of the pool itself, a rather muddy tract of water, shaped rather like a shoehorn, perhaps 10 yards at its widest point, and in length, oh, probably 40 to 50 yards. A muddy tract, as I say, its banks churned up over months and months by the hooves of thousands of head of game. The pool itself is the central point, and surrounding it, stretching for, oh, 500 yards in all directions, is the gleaming white disk of the pan itself, predominantly limestone. And there on the outer fringes of the 500-yard perimeter is the Mopani forest and the dense acacia scrub itself. In fact, it's rather like being on a desert island, surrounded by a green, brown, golden sea of autumnal colors, the autumnal colors of the Mopani trees. And dotted over this pan, screened sometimes by the odd acacia tree and mopani bush, are hundreds of head of zebra and wildebeest, some gambolling and playing on the pan, some grazing on the outer fringes, and yet again more drinking here at the pool. All drowsing away the hot afternoon sunshine, and all absolutely unaware, oblivious to the fact that not more than 10 yards in front of us, perhaps at the most 15, in front of us and to the left of us, behind an acacia bush, screened slightly, is a young lioness, probably no more than 2 years old, perhaps even less. And she is lying there, panting slightly in the hot afternoon sunshine, her stomach to the ground, gazing at us. Indeed, she'd been gazing at us rather suspiciously for the last half hour, and yet, now and again, nonchalantly casting her eyes over the scene. And who knows what's going on in her head? Perhaps she's thinking of the dinner to come, or perhaps she's thinking of her mates, the lions that might be lurking in the bush behind her. Maybe she has thoughts of driving the wildebeest and the zebra over to the edges of the pan, where her mates will make an instant kill. But there she is, and she seems merely content to sit and wait. Like us, she is watching, waiting, and listening.
And so they waited. An hour passed, and the sun dipped behind the western horizon of Mopani trees. Then it happened. Like a lightning flash, the whole pan erupted into shimmering motion. The dust rose in giant billows as the zebra stampeded. And even as the flashing hooves drove towards the sheltering Mopane, a streak of molten gold shot across the pan.
She's going for that wildebeest.
Hundreds escape. One remains. The victim. And a scene that has been acted a million times is repeated again.
That wildebeest is making a tremendous racket. I thought that lions, you know, once they've made their kill, try to strangle it or break its neck as quickly as possible. But look at her. She's having a tremendous battle there.
Oh, yes, you can see the reason why that is. You can see it's a very, very young lioness. And actually, she shouldn't have made the kill on her own. But it must have been so tempting that she tried it. You will probably find that there are other lions hidden in the bush. And she should have driven the wildebeest towards them. But now this must have been too tempting for her, and she got onto the wildebeest, and now she has probably broken its back by the way it's lying there, and she's unable to kill it. The wildebeest is putting up quite a struggle there.
Well, it's making a tremendous racket.
She's having a hard time handling it.
Look at her now. I mean, she's got one paw, across the neck. She's lying, I notice, you know, near its back, so that the wildebeest has to turn its head if it's trying to horn her. In other words, she's lying in the safest position.
That's right. You see, he can turn his head, but why I say his back is broken, because he seems to be able to move only his head upwards, and she's staying well clear of that.
Yeah.
If she weren't afraid of those horns, she might have gone forward and broken his neck, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she seems to be a bit afraid. She must be inexperienced. She's quite young.
Yeah, yeah. She's lying there just with that.
Just keeping him down.
And keeping him down.
That's right.
And, well, there she is. She's gazing, looking out into the bush. She might very well be looking for the males.
Well, let's watch closely. If they're there, they're bound to come out anyway. And they've heard all this going on. And
perhaps they're frightened of us.
Well, they'll be cautious in any case.
Mm. If you can't see them, they're probably concerned. They see us.
They've always seen us all along if they're there.
Listen to that wildebeest, Gus.
She wouldn't, or she couldn't, kill the old bull. His terrible cries continued to resound across the waterhole. And then, from the Mopane fringe, came the sounds of hunger.
Hey, over there, to the right.
Where?
No. Right.
There you are. That's a big male coming out there now. And another one immediately behind him. You see there, too?
Where?
Just
behind. Oh, I see.
Just behind.
Yes, they are.
That's right. Well, I thought that must be it. But they're coming in cautiously.
See them looking at us? See them watching us? She doesn't seem to be so concerned.
No. She's all occupied with her kill. But just look at those two lions. They're eyeing us, but they're making straight for the kill. Oh, yes. No, they're coming on. But just look at them watching us. They're not taking their eyes off us.
They're not a chance.
No. The one stopped now. Watching us, the other one's moving. Now let's just sit out quietly. They'll come up right up to the kill, and then they'll probably take over.
Again they waited. Slowly the two lions approached, sinews rippling, heads slung low. The scent of the kill stronger than their fear of man.
To stay around there.
But the lioness was hungry. It was probably her first strike. Perhaps pride compelled her to hold her ground. But she had a lesson to learn, and the old boy in the lead was going to teach her.
Thank you.
lioness takes flight. The younger lion, sobered by the old boy's ferocity, keeps his distance. And the old lion, old battle-scarred warrior, Old Joe, as he came to be nicknamed, breaks the wildebeest's neck and settles down to enjoy the feast all by himself. Horizons deepen to amber. Coinseb is bedding down for the night. But there's work to be done, a kill to be followed through to the finish. Got to get close up to hear the crunch of bones. But where? No protection here from hungry lion. No safety for a man with a tape recorder on this open pan. But there, that mopani tree, isolated in limestone, a perfect tree for a hide. A big enough tree for a man with a tape recorder to eavesdrop on hungry lion. Chase old Joe away with the truck, move the dead wildebeest, chain it to the mopani trunk, and then build the hide.
Krijg al die bindraads voor die bas. Al die stukjes. Die stukjes draad.
How many poles have you got there?
About 20.
Yeah. And how are we going to arrange those?
Flat.
Lay them flat across.
Tie them.
Across this branch here.
Across these two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tie them. You'll sit at the bottom end because if anybody slips, it'll be you. It might be that the hyenas, who are usually fairly late comers, only arrive now around about 9, 10 o'clock.
About 9 or 10.
No. But I think this is going to be very cocker.
It's going to be quite a bit of a slant, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Why don't you start at the bottom end? It's more level here, Stoffel.
Yeah.
Much more level over there. You see, and closer to the lions, too.
The trouble with these trees are that the nearer you get to the edge, you balance on nothing, and then all of a sudden, just decides to give way.
Well, that's pretty level.
And fair, eh? Hey, Guzman, waar is die draad waar ik aan
moet gaan? Draad.
Oh, you got it. I just want to see whether it's going to work or not. Actually, we should have something to rest our feet on. We're sitting flat for 4 hours.
Should I have to start tying them?
Yeah. Gordon, I'm afraid you won't have a back rest.
No, not to worry. as long as I don't fall down between the poles, then I'm happy.
Well, you won't, believe me. When things start looking up...
Or looking down.
Or looking down and getting very serious...
Yeah.
I think you'll sit as quiet as a little felt mouse. And you'll use about half the space allocated. I wouldn't be surprised if you use only a third of the space.
I don't think I'll be surprised if you don't find me there at all. It's just my tape recorder. Remote control, operated from 2 miles away.
Yeah. There's one thing about this lot. If you lose your balance, you won't be able to tell your grandchildren that.
Well, that looks fairly firm. You're standing right in the...
Oh, it's firm
enough.
Middle
of the logs now.
It might be a little bit on the narrow side.
Yeah. When the bar breaks, what is it?
The cradle
will fall and down will come.
Gordon recorder and all.
Recorder and all.
10 feet above the kill, Stoffel, Rocher, Barcy Martins, and Gordon Pethick settled down in the hide, collars turned up to the biting cold. Hunched in silence, they watched the sun go down. It'll be many hours before they see it rise again. Jackals. The black-backed jackal calling to his kindred. And old Joe, who's never been far away, is back.
Old Joe, that was Stoffel's nickname for the lion, is now lying by the kill, his head sort of tucked right into the wildebeest carcass. He already broke the stomach lining this afternoon. hope to get at the vitamin-rich liver and kidneys, and he's also consumed the heart and the lungs. We can generally see what's going on because every now and again Stoffel shines his torch down onto the kill. Well, Joe doesn't seem to be disturbed. He sort of blinks his eyes at the light, completely bewildered as to the direction of the beam. And now he's moving round the kill, moving round to the back of the wildebeest. Now he seems to be having a go at the rib cage, particularly the thick upper portions that line the spine. Incredible the capacity of his appetite. He'll probably stow away some 60 or 70 pounds a week before he's finished, and then sleep and doze for 3 or 4 days before he kills again. Incidentally, I'm sitting directly above the kill with Stoffel on my left, nearest the trunk, and Barsi to my right and just behind me. And the microphone itself is just below my head, directly above the kill. The delirious call of hyena, echoing from the north side of the pan. Curiously enough, there are very few hyena in this part of the world. Also, Stoffel was telling me a short while back, plenty of jackal, but only one or two hyena. You know, old Joe's a huge lion, probably close on to 500 pounds. He's got several scars, a great sort of black welt on his left flank, and a long, jagged groove running down his right forearm. But the most remarkable thing about him are his eyes. They seem to glow in different colors. In torchlight, they're a sort of amber yellow. In the darkness, a sort of green. And yet there was a distinct moment this afternoon when they definitely appeared red. Anyway, he's still sitting there at the rib cage, working down from the head towards the rump, and he's actually opened up 3/4 of its length. No other lions in the vicinity, just old Joe. I saw a jackal a moment ago, sort of slinking round the kill, but he appears to have pushed off.
But the jackal was soon to return. Only to beat a rapid retreat. Old Joe, momentarily disturbed, resumed his feast.
Now he's moved to the hindquarters, sitting immediately behind the carcass, stretched out at full length with his forepaws braced against the ground, tearing, jerking, ripping, with only momentary pauses in between. Lions. More lions from over on the right, from the Mopani bush, and old Joe's turning, head over his shoulder, and here comes another male. Here comes a male, silvery in the light of the half moon. Slow, swinging strides, about 20 yards away, old Joe still standing there, rigidly at attention, his head half thrown over his shoulder. And now he's turning, old Joe's turning, the other lion is still walking in with slow, deliberate strides, stalking up towards the kill, and old Joe's turned completely round now in his tracks. The other lion, 15 yards away. He's coming closer, still moving up to the kill. He's probably 10 yards. 8, 5. One of the guest lions, if you can call him that, decided to join old Joe And old Joe moved in from the side and charged straight for the shoulder. Well, there was some confusion. We couldn't really see what was going on. But old Joe seemed to have caught the other one at a slight disadvantage. And the intruder wasn't standing there, wasn't going to stand there for any nonsense. And within about 15 seconds, 20 seconds, he took to his heels. And now, old Joe, rather ruffled, is back at the carcass.
The hours passed slowly and relentlessly, and by early morning, old Joe could hardly stand.
I think he's had enough now. He's been at it now for, 8 hours, and all that's virtually left of the wildebeest is the head and the chest and the two front legs. And now he gets up, sort of stretches himself, stumbling to his feet, gigantically monstrous with all the food that he's had, and he bends down and sort of licks his shoulder and his forepaw. And now he's turning away from us, moving south towards the waterhole. Probably he's now going to drink. And slowly, very slowly, he moves off into the bush. Lions drink very heavily, probably for 4 or 5 minutes after a kill, especially a kill like this one. And once he's drunk, well, then he'll probably move off into the bush, find a secluded place, and there he'll probably sleep the whole day through.
Dawn is about to break, heralded by the cackle of Franklin. And the faces of the watchers are now ashen grey with fatigue. But the kill is still attended by Jackal and Hyena.
There's not much left of the wildebeest now. Old Joe, of course, is gone. But in his place is one hyena. He came at about 3 o'clock. And now he's settled himself near the front of the wildebeest, and he's at this moment attacking the elbow of one of the forelegs. He's quite content to be at the kill, but the jackal are quite different in their habits. There's, five of them that I can see. They tend to stay out on the outer perimeter of the kill, on the outer circle, and they move in with rather dainty steps into the kill, snatch up a piece of skin or a piece of meat, and then move back again and consume it well away from the kill itself, possibly the fear of the hyena. So there they are, the hyena and the few jackal, and believe me, there isn't very much left of the kill now. And I wouldn't be surprised that when the sun comes up, they'll spot us and be off.
But they were gone before the sun came up. The first rays of light revealed only the horns and the hooves and the bones of a wildebeest that had seen the sun rise the day before. And then with the day came the vultures.
There seems to be two types of vulture here. I can see the common cape vulture and its close associate, the white-backed vulture. Just the two types. There are about 20 or 30 of them here, I should say. Some just waddling about on the outer fringes, others there at what's left of the kill, tearing at strips of skin or trying to get at the marrow in the bones. One chap there has actually got the tibia of the wildebeest foreleg in his beak, and he's holding it aloft with an air of fierce possession. But it's rather a sobering sight, this, rather a grisly sight at this hour of day, particularly on an empty stomach. It's somehow ignoble. Somehow it symbolizes all that's gluttonous, ingredient, parasitical. Ugly boots.
When they finally took off, they could hardly lift from the ground.
Thank you.
The kill was complete. But not quite. From the miserable remains rose a hum of activity. The last visitors had arrived. And the whole day was theirs. The weary watchers climbed down from the tree and returned to camp, to eat and sleep. Only Basi was able to voice his thoughts.
You know, in all my years in the bush, I have never seen a complete lion kill. And it's been a privilege to watch this from the beginning right to the end.
Join us again next week for another story of the African bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.